You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The CARES Act that was passed by Congress and signed into law by the president 4 months ago, it established a $150 billion coronavirus relief fund for state, county, municipal, and tribal governments to deal with pressing expenditures due to the COVID-19 pandemic. And roughly $2 billion flowed into Wisconsin, and now local governments are tasked with distributing these funds in the best way possible. We're wondering if these dollars are making it to their intended targets. Was your community eligible for these federal funds? Have you received them? What guidance have you received on how to use stimulus dollars? We're at 800-642-1234. Jerry DeShane is Executive Director of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities. Jerry, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you for having me back, Kate. It's good to hear from you.
Well, you know, municipalities all over the country are in the same boat here, receiving these federal dollars through the CARES Act. How is that distribution going?
I would have to say that it's going like everything else with the pandemic. We're learning that what we thought would work didn't work, and what we're doing in the second try is working much better. It took a while for the Evers administration and local governments to get on the same page with what was eligible and how and why you described it that way, but I think we're there now.
Okay, so what have been the sticking points and the things that have been really difficult to work through in this process?
Well, the guidance that came down from the federal government, first of all, was non-existent in the first few weeks after Congress passed the CARES Act. The state literally did not know what the rules would have to be for dispersing the money. Then they got that. They had to come up with some of their own rules. And we found that the rules the state came up with for how, you know, what's eligible, what's not eligible, how do you account for it, just simply didn't mesh with how local governments operated in Wisconsin. So we worked with the Evers administration, basically went back and did a lot of fine tuning. And I am happy to say that at this point, it appears that most of the COVID-related expenses that your cities, villages, and towns are seeing, for the most part, the state will be able to give us reimbursement money for that. I do say the downside is the biggest problem is yet to be resolved.
So cities, villages, and towns, what kind of expenses are occurring amid the pandemic? What are the greatest costs?
Human resources. I mean, that's the bottom line is we've had to redirect what people in the village hall are doing. The election, you remember the April election and calamity is probably the best word for it. What a calamity that was. Well, the biggest expense was local governments had to shift people away from their other duties and shift them to working on pandemic-related duties, whether it was something as simple as standing at the door with a thermometer or handing out PPE or spending all your time on the phone processing absentee ballot requests. Those were a lot of the biggest shifts. Then there was a lot of hardware. In order to make telework work, you obviously need laptop computers. You need the hardware for being able to work from home or work from a safe place. And most village governments or city governments, for that matter, simply didn't have that hardware available.
Oh, certainly not enough laptops to go around and the devices you need with them to make remote work happen.
Exactly. You know, I wish I owned stock in Dell. Because I'm sure a lot of us, not just public sector, private sector, had to go out and do a lot of this work. Well, in local governments, there just aren't those sorts of spare cash laying around to do that. When you have to make that sort of an unplanned expenditure, it has to come out of something else.
We're talking with Jerry DeShane, Executive Director of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities. We're looking at the Coronavirus Relief Fund and the emergency aid set aside for municipalities to use to stop the spread of COVID. You can join in. How is your city, village or town using these funds? What questions do you have on the guidance? How are you tracking the money spent to help stop the spread of COVID? We're at 800-642-1234. Jerry, I would imagine that there has to be so much careful accounting here to make sure that you keep track of what you're spending in order to get that reimbursement.
Well, and you're absolutely right, Kate. And as a matter of fact, that in and of itself is a considerable expense. But we have been telling city and village governments from day one to keep track of all of their expenses, whether you do it in your accounting software or you set up an Excel spreadsheet, but to keep track of it. Because what happens with federal reimbursement, I mean, Congress passes a law, says $2 billion, yay, everybody's happy. But what they don't tell you is that about 2 years later, a team of auditors will come back through and fly spec every decision that the local government made. You know, and that's good. This is public money, right? It should be accounted for very carefully. But this is a pandemic. This is an emergency. And usually in an emergency, the first thing you do is cut all the corners on paperwork. What local governments learned the hard way a few tornadoes ago is that you can't do that. So when you're in local government, if you have to buy, you know, a self-opening door or you have to buy tons of PPE supplies, you'd better keep the receipt and you'd better have that somewhere where you can put your hands on it, because there's going to be a federal second guesser coming by in about 2 years asking about it.
With that federal emergency aid, do you keep those dollars separate from other budget accounts? Do you handle that money separately?
Well, on the when it's coming in, uh-huh. Yes. But the reality is the money coming in is reimbursing cities and villages for money that they had to pay out of their general fund that they did not expect. You know, in Wisconsin, that's $200 million shared among cities, villages, tribes, towns and counties. And they did not budget that $200 million. Frankly, that $200 million, I have to say, doesn't cover all of their losses over the last 6 months, not nearly, but it covers their out-of-pocket expenses. No, you don't put it in a separate account, but you do have to account for it separately.
Jerry, how...
Yeah, I'm not an accountant, Kate, so I probably said that wrong.
That's all right. You know, how do you account for things like changing out water fountains and converting to touchless faucets? And would that fall under the federal aid dollars?
We believe it does, because obviously it's going to keep people safe. Whenever you can cut down on shared use of surfaces, like faucet handles and door handles and things like that, it helps keep people safe. Initially, the state of Wisconsin said no, but when we carefully read the federal guidance, it said yes, or at least it made us think the answer was yes. So that's a lot of the jockeying. When you know, Congressman whatever, Congressman Pocan, Congressman Tiffany, when they voted for the CARES Act, they probably didn't write into the bill, yes, you can replace your faucet handles with touchless faucets. And they may or may not have been thinking about that. But somebody somewhere has to think about that. So far the answer is yes, Kate. And call me back in 2 years when the federal auditors have come through and I'll let you know if we were right.
We're learning how communities are using CARES Act relief funding and the challenges that they face with Jerry Deshane. He heads up the League of Wisconsin Municipalities. How do you think the federal government should be helping out cities and states right now as the pandemic continues? Do you work for a village or city or town government? Are you able to access federal dollars? How are you spending it? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in a minute with Jerry Deshane right here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the Coronavirus Relief Fund and how the federal funds have trickled down from states to local governments to villages. It's the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. On Capitol Hill, there's a debate over whether to relax restrictions on how states and municipalities use the emergency aid. Current rules limit spending to expenses directly tied to COVID. Do you think the Federal Coronavirus Relief Fund did enough to help cities and towns across the country? What questions do you have about how your community can use these dollars? What about access? Join in 800-642-1234. Jerry DeShane is Executive Director of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, and he stays with us. Let's take a call now. Linda is joining us from Green Bay. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I was wondering, you keep hearing Senator Ron Johnson and some of the other Republicans saying they don't want to vote for any more money to go out because there's a bunch of money still sitting there. Is that money already been spent by the municipalities and they just haven't been, you know, the paperwork hasn't caught up and they haven't been reimbursed? Or is that just extra money that, you know, that's just there and hasn't been spent yet?
Linda, great question. And we had Senator Ron Johnson on our program earlier this month to talk about federal coronavirus aid, and here he is.
We haven't spent about $1.2 to $1.3 trillion of that $2.9 trillion. So rather than authorize more spending, what we ought to do is take a look at what we've done, what worked, what didn't work, what can be fixed.
All right, Jerry, what do you think here, getting at Linda's question?
Three quick thoughts, and I'll try to keep this fairly straightforward. First of all, we appreciate the senator voting for the CARES Act, but what the senator doesn't remember is that he works for a government that doesn't move as fast as Congress itself. We talked earlier about those guidelines that had to be written. When they passed the bill, they said, you know, go forth and spend this money on coronavirus-related expenses without really defining what those were. So the federal government had to define it, the state government had to redefine it, and then they turned to the local governments, and we said, fellas, what you wrote here really doesn't describe what local governments do. So that was the first thing, in answer to both Senator Johnson's point and Linda's question. Until those guidelines were written, the governor wouldn't authorize the money because he couldn't, and local governments couldn't even apply for the money because they didn't know what was an eligible expense. The other thing that comes into play is that that bill specifically does not allow local governments any credit for lost income. And that is far and away the biggest expense that local governments have. Here in Wisconsin, we're estimating cities and villages alone lost over $400 million as a result of the pandemic. And that's not eligible for reimbursement. So the bottom line is, have a little bit of patience. That money, believe me, will be spent. It will be spent over the next few months.
And, you know, Senator Johnson has said we want to go back and refine and make sure that it is spent and kind of cross the T's and dot the I's, if you will. Is that imperative to do right now, or do you feel it's best to get another allocations of funds to municipalities?
Well, flexibility will be helpful, and we support what he's talking about as legislation to make it clear that those faucets and those laptops and the time that police officers were redirected away from their regular duties, that all of that will be reimbursed and that the auditors won't second guess us down the road. But, you know, by a 2-to-1 margin, the more important issue is that lost revenue. Local governments in Wisconsin operate on a shoestring. We have seen the loss of over $400 million, we're estimating, in local sales taxes where they exist, in utility revenues, and local governments just don't have that kind of money in reserve. So making up for lost revenue, it should be, in our view, a priority of Congress's now over and above flexibility. Flexibility matters, but not as much as lost revenue.
In that lost income category, and you just named a few places, what is the impact of lost sales tax revenue?
Anything that goes to the bottom line of a city means that there's something they can't do. Nine times out of 10, that means they're not going to fix the pothole in front of your house this year. Maybe we'll get to it next year. Maybe we'll get to it in 5 years. It means local governments have to borrow more money, which is something that puts off the pothole problem for about five more years. So you'll see an increase in debt if Congress does nothing at all on the lost revenue. Some of our larger police departments will have to lay off staff. That's inevitable. Police spending is the biggest budget item in most city budgets, and that's where you go first when you've got a big budget hole in the future. You'll see most of this damage next year. That's just the way local financing works in Wisconsin.
Yeah, and when you look at it through the fiscal year lens. So Congress is currently debating another aid package. And what, from your perspective, from municipalities' perspective, what needs to be different this time in this aid package?
A little bit of clarity, a little bit more understanding of how local governments work. I think what delayed the first package more than anything else is that the federal government had no idea how local governments actually operated, how they operated their budgets. But most of all, they need to understand that just like families, just like businesses, local governments lost a ton of revenue. And when you do that, when you're already operating on a tight budget, something has got to give.
Have you seen, Jerry, local governments furlough or lay off?
Not in Wisconsin. Because we're primarily a property tax state, for good or bad, property taxes are a pretty stable source of revenue. So it won't be until next year that you will start to see furloughs. I think one thing you did see was a lot of summer recreation workers did not find jobs. So those weren't full-time permanent jobs in local government. But a lot of people that relied on that for temporary income, college student income, that did not happen because most of the summer recreation programs in Wisconsin did not go forward or went forward at a fraction of their usual pace. The furloughs that are really going to hurt core government services are still coming in Wisconsin. Look to those in 21.
Yeah, as you look to 2021, help us understand what budgets might look like, the reductions that you might be talking about or seeing. What does 2021 hold?
2021 holds a lot of frightening worries for us. Right now, we're estimating that that $400 million in lost revenue doesn't come back. So you've got that. If the state runs a budget deficit, the second biggest source of income for local governments is state shared revenue. So if the state has to balance its budget, and they're talking about $1 billion shortfall, the shared revenue program could easily take a 5 or a 10% hit. And that's $50 to $100 million of lost income for local governments. Depending on how long the pandemic stays with us, you know, revenues for utilities are way down, revenues for recreational activities. I mean, the other parts of local government, which don't sound like much to you and I, but if you're a little village and really all you have going is a convention, a meeting center or a recreation center, that's a substantial portion of your budget.
What happens to communities that are under 500,000 people, the small communities?
You just described virtually every city and village in Wisconsin. We only have one that's above that number. They suffer, you know, quite frankly, whether you're in Big Falls, Wisconsin, or Milwaukee, Wisconsin, the dynamics are the same. It's just that there are more zeros. You know, Big Falls has policing needs. Big Falls has fire service needs. They have EMS needs. They feel the pinch just as much as Milwaukee feels the pinch. But because there's, oh, I forget the number, 50 or 60 people living there, the sense of scale is much different than it is in Milwaukee. But the problems are the same. They're going to have to cut back on their ambulance service. They're going to have to cut back on what they pay their fire departments. You know, how exactly that plays out is going to be different in every city and village. But Big Falls is going to feel the pain just as much as Milwaukee feels the pain.
So as we start to wrap up here, Jerry, what keeps you up at night and what is your focus right now when there are so many challenges? What do you try to focus on?
That's a terrific question. The next thing in front of you is what local governments focus on. Right now, I will tell you they're focusing on the August election, and they're praying that we learned in April how to do an absentee ballot election, because in Wisconsin, we've never done that before. It could be chaotic. I'm very much afraid that Congress is going to go home without doing anything on this lost revenue question. So that's happening this week. And by the way, folks, please call Congressman Johnson or Senator Johnson and Senator Baldwin and the other people as well. But that's keeping me up at night. As much as anything else, Kate, it's the 900 people that have died in Wisconsin, the 50,000 people that are sick. We haven't gotten this thing under control. So I'm masking up. My grandkids are masking up. And we're, you know, doing our best to get through it.
Jerry, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate. Have a good day.
You too. Jerry DeShane, Executive Director of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities. Coming up, we check in on Foxconn and its plant in Mount Pleasant with a business reporter. That's after a news update here on the Ideas Network. Checking in on Foxconn on the morning show, I'm Kate Archer-Kent. 3 years ago this week, we learned Foxconn would build a manufacturing plant in Wisconsin.
One of the truly great companies of the world will build a state-of-the-art manufacturing facility for the production of LCD panel products in Wisconsin, investing many, many billions of dollars right here in America and creating thousands of jobs.
President Trump unveiling the news Foxconn would build a $10 billion factory. What questions do you have about Foxconn's footprint in Wisconsin? Do you or someone you know work at the Mount Pleasant facility? What does your job entail? What's your reaction to the Foxconn jobs report? It's 800-642-1234 to join in. Arthur Thomas covers manufacturing for BizTimes Milwaukee. Arthur, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
So Wisconsin lawmakers had offered up more than $2.8 billion worth of incentives back in 2017 to lure Foxconn. It sparked lots of criticism that the state was giving away too much money. Has Wisconsin paid out job credits to Foxconn yet?
So far, no, they haven't paid out any tax credits on either for job creation or for capital investment. Foxconn missed the jobs threshold in 2018. I think it was about 260 jobs they had to have. They were somewhere in the 100 range, 170 maybe. So this year, though, it seems Foxconn may have hit the job threshold, so the possibility they're paying out credits, but nothing paid out so far, at least on the tax credit front.
So there was recently a jobs report. A company said it hired almost 800 employees in 2019. What did we learn from this report?
Sure. So actually this spring we got an initial kind of look at the report. Foxconn was required to file annually a report with the state saying how many people they've hired, how much they've invested, things like that. And so as you mentioned, yeah, 800 employees hired or their 800 employee entries. The company said they thought about 550 would qualify for jobs tax credits. The threshold being 520 for this year to get any credits. So that the difference there is people either leaving before the end of the year, transferring between different entities, things like that. And really, they got to that number with kind of a late hiring surge in the year. About 70% of the people they hired last year were in the fourth quarter and December specifically. So they kind of ramped up hiring at the end. That got them to that number. They paid out around $18.9 million in wages, according to my math from earlier this year. You can't count all of those towards the jobs credits. Anyone who makes over $100,000 per the contract doesn't get that amount above $100,000 doesn't count towards tax credits. So that's about 30 employees that the amount comes down. A 17% tax credit on about $16, $17 million. They're around $2.86 million in tax credits potentially for the job creation this year.
$2.8 million at stake on the jobs credits. So what is the status of the 2017 contract agreement with Foxconn? Where does it stand?
Sure. So, and the report you mentioned that we just got was kind of an audit of that was required in that contract. A third party group is supposed to come in and look at Foxconn's payroll reporting and their capital expenditure reporting and kind of see if it's up to snuff. The report was, you know, initially supposed to come 45 days after Foxconn filed. So that would have made it due in mid-May. As so many other things these days, coronavirus delayed it, or at least that was the explanation that we got for why it was delayed. So it came out, it was due by July 14th, I believe it was.
And is this the report by Deloitte?
Yeah, this is the Deloitte report.
Okay.
That kind of takes a closer look at, you know, what Foxconn told the state back in April and goes through it and things like that. So that report's in, and now it's in WEDC's hands to kind of figure out if they're going to pay out tax credits for what Foxconn did in terms of hiring last year, in terms of their investments. So the big question is whether, I mean, the threshold looks like Foxconn hit the numbers to get, you know, tax credits. But the question is whether the work they've done, the people they've hired, meets what was laid out in the contract, which does include some kind of really specific language about what the company was going to be doing. And the company is not doing that specific thing anymore. And
making LCD panels.
Making LCD panels. And specifically, the contract references what's called a Gen 10.5 LCD fabrication plant. So this would have been a plant designed at its most efficient to make really big LCD screens. Think, you know, like 85, 90 inch television screens or bigger. They, you know, by 2018 had moved away from making this, you know, building that plant. That plant would have come with a bigger capital investment. It would have required a Corning glass plant to be on site with the Foxconn plant, which would have been a potential $1 billion additional capital investment that wasn't covered in the initial announcement. So this was kind of like the added bonuses that we were supposed to be getting.
You needed a product supplier to be there in order to facilitate this product.
Yeah. I mean, the glass that they use, my understanding is it's so thin and it's such a big screen that you can't really cost effectively transport it, you know, any distance other than to really have it on site with it. So instead, they're building what's a Gen 6 plant is what they've said, which they say gives them more flexibility. It can more efficiently make smaller screens, think laptops, maybe displays in cars, tablets, things like that. Gives them more product flexibility is why they said they've gone after this. Plus, there was kind of a glut of those big screens on the market over the last few years. So they're you know, that shift, though, the contract references that Gen 10.5 plant specifically. And so now they're building something different. So are they living up to their end of the contract is kind of the question that's out there for WEDC to try and decide whether they're going to, you know, verify these tax credits, the $2.8 million that I mentioned. And then really the bigger part is the at least now, the capital investment that Foxconn has made around $280 million worth, which with a 15% credit would be another $42 million in tax credits that's potentially available to them right now.
And we're talking with Arthur Thomas, covering manufacturing for Biz Times Milwaukee, getting an update on Foxconn and its plant in Mount Pleasant. And you can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Arthur, as you say, in the hands of WEDC, Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, and their secretary, Missy Hughes, what is the state at in the process of negotiating perhaps a new contract?
Yeah, I think there's, you know, it sounds like there's been kind of ongoing discussions or at least exchange of letters of kind of who's, you know, where, which position each side is taking on this. We haven't really gotten any kind of update on where contract negotiations might be at. WEDC really doesn't like to comment on ongoing negotiations. It was actually unique during the Foxconn process back in 2017 that we actually did get kind of some updates. I mean, usually if they're negotiating a contract, we don't hear anything from them. And that's kind of what we've gotten so far. But it's go ahead.
What do we know about the investments that have been made by Mount Pleasant and Racine County to spend millions of dollars to help lure Foxconn to update roads, sewer, water infrastructure, to pay to buy up land for the plant? How much has been spent there?
I don't have the exact figure offhand, but it's significant. It's in the hundreds of millions. I think the numbers that have been tossed around, you know, people talked about a $4.1 to $4.6 billion all-in investment for Wisconsin. So that counted the tax credits and then all the other stuff that's been spent on. So, I mean, anyone who's driven down 94, which I do quite frequently, you know, it's nice to have a wider highway now that, you know, most of that work's done. And I've been fortunate to avoid most of the shutdowns. Usually. So, I mean, that's obviously a big investment that was done by the state and with federal money. But yeah, hundreds of millions spent on buying up land, and lots of people had to move out of their homes. And some people, you know, kind of really against their will and kind of almost forced out. So there's, you know, that side effect to all this work.
All right, so we got news last month. Foxconn is partnering with Medtronic to make 10,000 ventilators. What's going on with the ventilator situation rolling out of the Mount Pleasant facility?
Sure. So, you know, like a lot of companies, so Medtronic, you know, a medical device maker, kind of did open sourced their ventilator designs. And Foxconn jumped on that and said, hey, we'll make that. We haven't maybe gotten a clear picture of, you know, how much they've ramped up the production. But we do know actually from the audit that Deloitte did, they included a survey with employees and kind of what project are you working on currently? And that was one of the ones that a lot of employees did point to that they're working on is figuring out how to make, you know, these ventilators and ramp up production. They've got to figure out sourcing, finding parts. It's kind of the same story we've seen kind of across manufacturing. You know, there's the number of different joint ventures, GE and Madison ramping up production, finding these parts to do this. It doesn't happen overnight. It takes time to ramp up manufacturing supply chains to make things, you know, make more of these. So they're working on that. They're also making masks down there for distribution. I think they're also selling some of those. So they're, you know, trying to contribute in some way to the COVID-19 fight.
Getting up to speed on Foxconn with Arthur Thomas, who covers manufacturing for Biz Times Milwaukee. How do you want to see the Evers administration working with Foxconn? What about its contract? Are you confident that Foxconn and its Mount Pleasant facility will be a net positive for the state, or do you have doubts? We're at 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Arthur Thomas on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're catching up on Foxconn news. 3 years ago this week, the deal was announced that Foxconn would build a $10 billion factory, create thousands of jobs in Wisconsin. Fast forward to last month, we learned Foxconn would start manufacturing ventilators at the Mount Pleasant facility for Medtronic. That's the medical technology company based in Ireland with operational headquarters in Minnesota. What questions do you have about Foxconn's vision for manufacturing here? Do you work for Foxconn? Are you working at the Mount Pleasant facility? What's the job like? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Arthur Thomas covers manufacturing for Biz Times Milwaukee. He stays with us. Let's take a call now. Christine is joining us from Eau Claire this morning. Hi, Christine.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to mention that the governor has asked state agencies for different give backs, money in their budget. And at the same time, we're talking about giving tax credits to a corporation, a capitalist corporation. It's just, we shouldn't be doing it. It was wrong in the first place. And it's just clearly a reason not to do these sorts of crony capitalism projects, because as a state, the tax money that they should be giving us, we're giving back to them. I mean, it really makes no sense.
Christine, thank you for the call. Arthur, there was criticism in 2017, and it's still lingering today, that the state was giving away way too much money here, and now amid the pandemic, as states cut their budgets.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, it's an interesting point. You know, I think in some ways, you know, the numbers I was talking about earlier, the $45 million, while it's a large number, you know, in terms of what they could have been eligible for. I mean, one of the points supporters of this would make when it was being debated was this is an earn, you know, pay earn as you go kind of setup, that they, you know, they hit thresholds, they earn based on number of jobs. So that part seems to be working. But, you know, yeah, like the caller said, you know, the budget situation is certainly going to be challenging going forward. I think the question is, you know, the state's in a contract now. So can you get out of that contract in a, you know, a cost-effective way? I mean, everyone probably remembers the high-speed rail issue when Governor Walker came in and there was a, you know, a lawsuit over exiting that contract. So I think that's kind of lingering as, you know, a potential issue. If the state wanted to walk away from this completely, how much would they be on the hook for otherwise?
What would those ramifications be?
Yeah. And also, you know, I mean, it's interesting to see, I mean, I haven't, just anecdotally, it doesn't seem we're getting as many announcements about these tax credits under Governor Evers for obviously much smaller projects. That could be just not, you know, it's tough to make an apples to apples comparison, especially for the last 6 months where projects maybe haven't been moving forward in the same way. But be interesting to look into whether he's, you know, awarding, WDC is awarding as many tax credits under the current administration as it did under the previous.
Christine, thanks. Let's bring in Jimmy now in Valley Junction with a question. Hi, Jimmy.
Morning. Yeah, I was, you know, they were touting all these high-paying jobs. I can't remember the exact number, but I thought $50K was thrown around. And I was wondering how many jobs are really there and what are the pay demographics?
Jimmy, thank you for that. And I know initially, as Jimmy says, I think there were even thrown out 13,000 job creation numbers.
Yeah, so 13,000 was the promised number. That's how you get to the $2.85 billion in tax credits, is if they were to create all those jobs and to invest the $10 billion. Actually, I think it's $9 billion to get to $2.85 billion. As far as the actual number of jobs, I think it's about 580 employees were hired as of last year. The company said it believed 550 of those would qualify for job credits. As I'm sorry, I don't have an actual average wage number for you, but so they paid out about $18.9 million in wages, and about 16.8 of that qualifies for tax credits. So, you know, tough to say exactly what the average wage is. I don't have it right at hand, but that gives you a sense of some of what they're doing out there. It's obviously a long way from 13,000, but it's, you know, progress in the right direction compared to where they were in 2018 when they didn't even hit the threshold for any credits.
Arthur Thomas is a reporter for BizTimes Milwaukee. He covers manufacturing. We're getting an update on Foxconn and its plant in Mount Pleasant. Arthur, there were lawsuits filed in 2018 over the Environmental Protection Agency's decision to exempt much of southeastern Wisconsin, including Racine County, from ozone regulations. Can you fill us in on the status of lawsuits?
Sure. So that one in particular, so EPA was going to designate much of southeastern Wisconsin as not in compliance with ozone standards, and then kind of at the last minute, reversed course and said, no, we're just going to designate these kind of small strips in Kenosha, Milwaukee, Ozaukee, and Sheboygan counties, city of Chicago, Illinois, and Killeen, Wisconsin were among those who sued. And some of the emails those groups got during that process kind of suggested maybe there was some political pressure for the EPA to make that switch. And, you know, there was scientists saying, you know, I'm going to need help figuring out how to word this so that it, you know, it passed muster. During the course of the lawsuit, EPA asked for a chance to go back and provide more explanation for the court on why it made the designations it did. Last month, the court ended up granting that request. The Wisconsin DOJ had said, no, you know, they shouldn't get another chance. They had their chance. So where it goes from there, it's a little unclear. That, I mean, EPA's actions could, I think, include anything from, you know, adding a little more documentation to the record up to kind of a redoing the full rulemaking process with public comment and several, you know, different periods to stretch out. So the immediate impact for Foxconn, if it were, you know, obviously the project is going already, but if those ozone standards were to be put in place, it might make it more costly for future expansion or limit future expansion type things that the company might do down there. But they already got their air permits to build what they have now. That's where we're at on that.
Mary from Milwaukee would like you to address the controversy of the water pollution issue with Foxconn. There was plans to divert 7 million gallons a day from Lake Michigan. Where does that stand?
As far as I know, they're still diverting water, the building out the infrastructure to draw on Lake Michigan water. They've, you know, said they're going to clean it as much as possible. It'll be interesting to see. I don't know, as the plans have evolved, how that impacts how much water they're going to need. It's really interesting.
If we would even know what amount of water they do need right now in the manufacturing they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think the process they have now, the things they're doing, they're making ventilators, they're making masks, they're working on building servers for various clients, they're doing printed circuit boards. It's not the LCD manufacturing that was going to be as maybe water intensive as what we were initially getting, but that part of the project is still coming. That's the million square foot building there. If anyone looks at the aerials that Kurt Waltz does on Foxconn, at Foxconn Aerials on Twitter, that big building is the million square foot fabrication facility. And so that would be the one that might be using a lot more water. I mean, it's really interesting that property really actually sits right on the subcontinental divide, which determines whether you're in or out of the Lake Michigan basin. So I don't know the latest, but as far as I know, they're still building out the infrastructure to draw on Lake Michigan water.
Very quickly, what's the latest on the innovation centers that were supposed to be in Milwaukee, Green Bay, Eau Claire, Racine, and Madison?
Yeah, and I think there's been, you know, reporting by a number of people. I think Corey Hess from WPR has actually done some work on this, in terms of just the lack of activity that's happening there. And it makes sense in some ways. Their contract doesn't really incentivize them to build those out as fast as they initially said they were going to. So, you know, there's maybe a little evidence that things are moving in Racine. They've drawn some permits for it, a build out down there for a tenant, but not a lot of activity happening. And what they said in previous years was up to 1,000 jobs would be outside of that Mount Pleasant campus at these innovation centers.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. Arthur, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Arthur Thomas covers manufacturing for Biz Times Milwaukee. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.